Well, first, before I get started, I want to make absolutely sure that I thank all of you for your very generous gift that was given to us last Saturday night during the children's program, Sunday night. And that was very much appreciated. But we also thank all of you who sent cards and Christmas greetings to us this year as well. This is our fourth week of the Advent celebration, and again, because it's a Sunday, it seems sort of odd, at least to this preacher anyway, and we've lit all four of the candles. If you want to see the middle candle lit, come tonight to Tiscoam. We'll light that one, and in fact, we will take our light as we circle the congregation and sing Silent Night. We will take our light from the Christ candle. But anyway, we've shot through hope and love and joy and peace, and a great number of references that I use during this time of year, they mix a couple of those up. Generally, my belief is that joy should be the third week. In a book that I have at home that I took some of the readings from, I think joy was maybe the last week or the second week or something, but it can get very confusing at times. But today, I remind you that Christmas itself is tomorrow, which, being on a Monday, also seems a little bit odd to me. But it is the culmination, for me at least, of quite a bit of work. And finding those things to preach about, once again this year, that would, I thought, somehow stimulate you to begin to come to the same conclusions that I come to during this time of Christmas. It is a wonderful time of year, but only if we receive it correctly. And that's a very important thing to do. We need to keep in mind that not everyone is going to greet Christmas Day as we might greet it. Perhaps there are folks right here in our congregation who view it in less than happy terms, as I'm sure most of us do. There are those who don't have any family either left or around this community, those who have lost a beloved spouse, particularly if this is their first Christmas in the loss of that spouse. Maybe some don't have the money to do all those things that we generally associate with Christmas. You know, the buying of presents and the preparing of a big meal for a huge family. There are many things this time of year to remind us that for many, Christmas is a very, very sad time. And it just doesn't seem to get any better, at least until well after the new year, when Christmas is so far behind us that we begin to forget the details that many people have to suffer through. And in short, there is only one thing that I can say today, and this might surprise many of you, but in many ways, Christmas really stinks. That's what the Grinch would say. You know the old Grinch who stole Christmas? You remember him, don't you? He was that stinky green ogre of a character created by Dr. Seuss, and his heart was too small to love and appreciate what Christmas was all about, because Christmas teaches us about the love of God. And I'm sure we all know the story. All those who live down in Whoville make the Grinch cringe with all their joy and their happiness at Christmas time. And so the Grinch does his very best to literally steal away the joy of the holiday. Now, if you're in Tiscoa, you can stop by the library, because each of the businesses in town were given a tree to decorate, and the churches as well. But the library this year decided to decorate their tree as a big image of the Grinch. So you've got the green, he's got the Grinch's face on him. And it is definitely counterproductive, at least on the surface, to what Christmas should be all about. But if you take just a few moments to think about it, there's probably not much that the Grinch had right. But I will still say that Christmas really did stink. It does stink. Now, before you start calling me the Grinch for referring to the stinky Christmas, I would ask that you hear me out, at least give me the benefit of the doubt. In your mind's eye, see if you can go back a little bit over 2,000 years to that village in the Judean countryside. We have such a quaint picture in our minds of what that first Christmas was somehow really like. And this is not the first time you've heard me referring to this either. I've been talking about it throughout all 4 weeks of our Advent celebration. Now, I noticed our bulletin today, and I want you all to take a picture of the front page and put that picture in your mind, because that represents exactly what I've been talking about, even to the place where the light is shining, excuse me, out of the windows and reflecting off that little bit of snow that is there. We see a sleigh, a horse-drawn sleigh, coming to church. That's not what Christmas is all about, no matter how hard we try to picture it that way. So there was basically two ways. This is what I think is important that we remember. There were two ways in Jesus' time how the people kept their livestock. First, there was the inner room of the home. Okay, you got that picture? On the interior of the home was this large room, probably kept full of straw. There were mangers and other necessities, maybe some drinking facilities for the cattle or for the animals that were kept in there. And it was all set up for the keeping of animals, whatever that family happened to own. Now, since most people weren't very well off in those days, and their homes were really quite modest, most of them didn't own much livestock anyway, but if they owned a donkey or some sheep or a few goats or something that they could milk or something that would help their family get along, they would keep them primarily in that room in their house. Now, you might like to know that the Paschal lamb, which we'll encounter him in a few months, but the lamb used for the Passover meal was probably, at least for a while, more likely a family pet than it was an animal who they were expected to slaughter in just a couple of months after this time in their celebration of the Paschal Passover. And most of these people didn't own barns, so their homes were constructed so that the animals were kept on the interior of the home. And the living quarters in that home quite literally ringed this small stable inside the house. Now, I'm not sure if you know it, and this might come as a shock to some of you, but goats and sheep and donkeys and most other domestic animals really do stink anyway. So imagine what it's like on the interior of that home. The odd part is that if we stay and live with this stink long enough, we somehow, it just doesn't seem to stink anymore. I remember years ago when we milked cows at our place, and we only ever milked two at the very most. Usually we just had one cow. It was a family cow. And I milked by hand because it would have been too expensive for the milking of one, even two cows, to buy all the machinery to milk it with a vacuum pump. And as I would sit down on my little three-legged stool and press my head into the cow's flank, the odor of that cow would fill my nostrils, and it smelled to me like the smell of a sweet flower. And it was that far away from the manure chute on that cow. And very often that cow, she never had any expectation that I would be down there milking. She would just suddenly begin to let go with whatever it was. And that would happen quite often. I remember the front of my head being so full of fur from pushing my head into that cow's flank. And you could literally reach up and just scrape it away. But anyway, the point is that I had gotten used to the stink of that cow to the point that I rather enjoyed it going out twice a day to milk her. Now, the other type of stable that they had in Bethlehem was generally a cave. And this is most likely where those who came to Bethlehem on that first Christmas would have found Mary and Joseph and the baby Jesus. And it could have been, the story goes that they went to the innkeeper and requested a room, and because of all the people that had come into this little town to be counted by the Romans for this census that Caesar Augustus had demanded, that all of these people had gotten there before Mary and Joseph, had filled up the inn, and there was no longer any room. And I can imagine this man looking at Mary's very pregnant condition and saying, well, I have a stable down. You just go down to the end of the road and you will see this cave there along where the hills or the mountains are beginning. And you can go in there until the baby's born. That's all he had to offer them. Now, it could have been down the street or maybe even on the edge of town, a little bit outside of town. But wherever it was very likely a cave of some sort, even just a carved-out place in the rock that would cut the wind from one or two directions. It would have been dark and damp, really musty-smelling, along with all those other odors we've talked about. And add to this damp, musty smell, there were really some sheep, probably a few lowing cattle, we've heard mention of them, and who knows, maybe a few chickens running around clucking, and you would have to go dig in the straw and look for the eggs that they would lay. There probably weren't any pigs in that place, because keep in mind, these were Jews, and pigs were dirty animals to them. They wouldn't have raised them. And there you have all the makings for a really stinky place to go in and have a baby. It just absolutely blows my mind to think that God would choose what I think was the lowest place he could find for Mary to have this child. And let's not even talk about the smell of it. Let's not forget that there were a cast of characters who came to the cave that night. They were quite as smelly in their own right. They were the shepherds. Now, the scripture tells us that they were out in their fields keeping watch of their sheep. And I don't want to get into a big argument about the time of year or December 25th. But very likely, with them being in the fields, it was at least springtime, maybe even later into the summer of June. Who knows? At this point, we don't really know, but we can speculate. But we are told that they were in the fields that night, and they were greeted by the heavenly host who began to sing to them. They were in the fields keeping watch on their smelly sheep in the fields of Palestine, and this, we can surmise, was not a place that was conducive to bathing on a regular basis. I don't even think the people in that time, no matter where they lived or what their occupation, would have been regularly bathing. But it's highly unlikely that any of these shepherds would have stopped at the Bethlehem bathhouse on the way by to go and visit the Messiah. Now, you put all of those elements together, and we have one recipe for a very malodorous experience. Let's just say this was not the place that was gently sprinkled with the perfume of Jean Maté. What an image. I've ruined your Christmas. But what a breathtakingly beautiful image. And it is beautiful because we know it was God entering into this world. It was God suddenly and finally becoming one of us. It was God taking on human flesh. It was God who had come down out of his heaven to show us what he looks like. And when God showed up, he showed up in the smelliest, lowliest place on the face of this planet. It was the most beautifully rancid place. And it changed the world forever. That's what happened that night in that smelly place. Now, the presence of Jesus into that place must have transformed the dark, damp, smelly confines of a cave. And it must have become a place of light and love and life itself. That's what Christmas did, because that is exactly what Christmas does in each of our lives and in the world in which we lived. Christmas literally means God with us, Emmanuel. And God is still invading this smelly old world of ours. And we know that God has come in Jesus to transform our dark hearts as well. Those hearts that have been made rancid by the stink of the sin that exists in each of our lives. And we need to experience transformation, all of us. And we literally need that all of the time. Now, I am reminded of the Scottish preacher Alexander White. He had faithfully served his congregation in the Scottish countryside for more than 40 years. And he was known by the community as being a saintly man. And one day, the lady parishioner came up to Reverend White, and she began to exclaim, "Oh, Reverend White, we're so blessed to have you as our pastor. You're such a saint." I've got to tell you, I hear similar things to that from some people in both of my congregations all the time. But Reverend White looked this woman straight in the eye, and he said, "Madam, if you could see my heart, you would spit in my face." He knew the condition of his own heart. It wasn't that he wanted it that way. It wasn't that he tried to sin. But he was a human being, and he constantly did it anyway. The idea is that we, of course, we want to stop sinning. But we need to ask continual forgiveness from God for all those times when we do. None of us is exempt from the stinkiness that's in any of our lives. Because hatred and greed and pride and arrogance and apathy and jealousy, and those are just a few of the sins that we commit while we battle almost daily. And let's not even get into some of those gray areas, things that we like to debate these days. Yes, it stinks. Of course it stinks. But Christmas also reminds us that Christ, who was born in that stinky old cave, desires to be born into you and to me as well. And what is really strange is that the very same Christ who transformed that stinky cave can transform even stinky old you and me just as easily as he transformed that cave. I am reminded too that the stink of sin, while even being transformed in us, still captures much of this world. We live next door to sin, no matter how good we try to be. It stinks that we live in a world where war continues to take innocent lives and force refugees to flee from their homes and their families and their livelihoods. It literally stinks that there are children in this day who will go to bed tonight hungry, and that in a world where there is such abundance that anyone should starve. And some starve because there aren't the resources to feed them. But most people starve because people withhold those resources as a show of power or as a punitive action against a rival. It stinks that we live in a political system that is so deeply divided that the good that could be done so rarely gets done because of personal agendas and desires for control. It stinks that we live in a world where our children are no longer safe from predators who would rob them of their innocence. It stinks that we live in a world where young women are kidnapped and forced into slavery of the sex trafficking business. It is a business that will be flourishing in the next few weeks as the playoffs and the national championships and even the Super Bowl in February will be upon us. It stinks that in the next 5 to 12 months, there will be 40 million abortions in this world. 40 million. It stinks that over the next year, it is projected that substance abuse and other addictive behaviors will have over a $600 billion impact on the economy in which we live. Not to mention the destruction of families that will accompany that, along with the loss of jobs and the failures at school. It stinks as we anticipate the rate of domestic violence and child abuse. It stinks, I tell you, it stinks. But Christmas comes again. And it reminds us that God is still with us. And that He is seeking to be born in us so that He might transform the darkness and the smelliness of this broken world. Yet those stinky places in each of our lives, if we would but take the time to get out of our comfortable worlds, we might just discover that God is here, because Christmas reminds us that God is truly born in the stinkiest places in this world. And He is born to bring light and life and love. And as Christ is born in each of us, we can bring the sweet aroma of His presence into those terribly smelly places. It certainly is not the way the Grinch would have meant it to be. But yes, you see, Christmas really does stink. But isn't it beautiful? Isn't it sweet? Isn't it really good? Finally, in closing today, I just simply say to all of you, Merry Christmas. And remember that Christmas, even though it stinks, but you see, with Jesus standing in us and next to us, none of us have to stink. We can all take on His perfume and the aroma of the life that He offers to each of us. Amen.